The Oldie Lunch Recordings presents Charles Moore on Margaret Thatcher, the authorised biography, Volume 2, Everything She Wants. Sponsored by Doro, number one in the senior mobile market.
I didn't mean to start with a parrot story, but Barry's got me in the mood. A friend of mine told me this, that you may remember that the Liberal Democrats in one of their relaunches had a bird as their symbol and depicted it as a sort of phoenix. And the friend of mine who was writing speeches for Mrs. Thatcher at the time thought that she should put into her party conference speech a thing from the Monty Python dead parrot sketch. So she said, he's put this in, and she said, what is this? And she had absolutely no idea in any sense what this could possibly be. And he explained, and she said, I see, is it funny? He said, yes, it's very funny, Prime Minister. And being a thorough woman, she wanted to understand the dead parrot sketch before she included it in her party conference speech. So they got a video round to number 10, and they all sat and watched the dead parrot sketch with Mrs. Thatcher. And because they were very, very nervous, as soon as it started, they all fell around with laughter, my friend and others. They were railing in their chairs. Mrs. Thatcher, completely bewildered by the whole sketch from beginning to end, absolutely no idea what this was about in any sense. She wasn't disapproving, she just had no conception of what this could possibly be. However, they persuaded her this was a very good joke against the Liberals, and she liked jokes against the Liberals, and she said, okay, I'll do it, and she kept rehearsing it again and again, you know, this is a dead parrot, an ex-parrot, it is deceased, all that stuff. And it was into the script, and for the party conference speech, which was, of course, a great occasion for her of every year, the one she minded most about. And my friend walked down with her, sort of behind the stage, as she was about to go on, and she turned to him and she said, John, this Monty Python, is he one of us? At which point, he thought it was much too late to start explaining, so he said, yes, Prime Minister, he's a very keen supporter. And of course, being a great trooper, she performed it absolutely brilliantly, and everybody roared with laughter, and she was none the wiser, but it was a great success. But that wasn't what I was going to talk to you about. I'm going to talk just about one thing, because there's so much to say, and we only have a very short time. I thought I would just pick a moment, really, which is Mrs. Thatcher going to Moscow in 1987, because it tells you a lot about her character, and it was a very extraordinary event. You may remember that she went, that she had Gorbachev to meet her in Chequers in 1984. That was a beginning of a sort of beautiful friendship, and it was a good spot by her because he was not at that point, which people forget, a Soviet leader. He was a likely future Soviet leader. He then became Soviet leader the following year, and partly due to Mrs. Thatcher's intermediating with Reagan, things all started to move towards de-escalation and trying to get rid of nuclear weapons and so on. And part of all this was Mrs. Thatcher persuading Reagan that there were things that could be done and convincing him that Gorbachev was worth talking to. And in March 1987, she accepted an invitation from Gorbachev to go to Moscow. And it was turned out to be a very important visit, and she was very conscious that it was an important visit. And at this time, relations were very bad all over again between the West and the East. Gorbachev saw her ambassador, British ambassador, before, and said that the Conservatives have the damp, stagnant smell of the prehistoric cave, was how he put it. So he wasn't feeling great about them. But she thought that there was a deal to be done somewhere in here about nuclear weapons and the reduction of nuclear weapons, so long as you didn't try to do it all at once, and you set up basically a stronger relationship. And she could see that this was the moment. And typically with Mrs. Thatcher, she prepared very carefully for this. She saw Oleg Gordievsky, the great defector from the KGB, who knew what was going on from the other way round, and he briefed her, though it wasn't an entirely successful meeting, the first one, because for security reasons, she insisted on calling him Mr. Collins throughout, so that his cover was not blown, even though it was in number 10 and there wasn't much danger. Everyone was very confused about this. She also saw Geoffrey Howe at various meetings, but whenever poor Geoffrey Howe, the Foreign Secretary, tried to open his mouth, she'd say, no, Geoffrey, we know what you're going to say. Gordievsky advised her that when she was going to go on Soviet television, which is very important, and that she should tell the Russian people how life was in Britain and why it was better. And he particularly told her to tell them about home ownership, because he said they all live in horrible state-owned flats like insects, and in your country, 70% of the population are owner-occupiers. So tell them this on television. It was good advice. Part of her preparation also for all of this was she always cared very much about the minute things, so she was very concerned about the, what she wore, which perhaps not so, such so minute a subject, actually, and also what present should be given to Gorbachev. On the latter point, the Foreign Office had said that she should give him 2 silver-backed hairbrushes. But she wrote on the piece of paper, "But he's completely bald," which the Foreign Office hadn't spotted. She then decided what to wear, and she calculated it very, very carefully for maximum theatrical effect. She was very keen on clothes, Mrs. Thatcher, and her mother had been a sempstress, and she cared a lot about how she looked in them, and she used them as sort of weapons, which I think is a great mistake that the V&A expressed a lack of interest in them when it came up a few years back, because it tells you so much about the history of this country and power in relation to clothes. And on this occasion, she really went to town, and Crawfee, her sort of great aide on all this, found a splendid black coat in the window of Acroscutum, and also a camel hair coat with a sable collar and a lovely sable hat, and beige suede boots, and all sorts of exciting things which could make her look really good. And she knew, Crawfee knew, that Mrs. Thatcher was excited by Gorbachev, who she said had, in Mrs. Thatcher's view, lovely sparkling eyes, and that she wanted to get the whole thing going and for the world to notice. And she arrived with the black coat in Moscow, with the hat, and with a black crocodile skin handbag, and looked terrific holding a bunch of roses with which she was presented. And all through this visit, you see in all the pictures, you can see it in the book, how she dresses for these occasions. So she went to a monastery to show her support for Christianity against the Soviet communism. And again, she's wearing these lovely beige boots, looking very elegant. And she held a candle in the church, a lit candle. Being a Methodist, she didn't know that you, when you light a candle, you're supposed to stick it in and pray with it, but she held it very reverently until somebody explained what to do. And she went round to a sort of show flat to see what ordinary Soviet life was like, and all the people started to turn up and started to buttonhole her and cheer her and ask her questions and so on, and she wanted to ask them questions. And so she started to make a sort of impact on the streets, and again, the photographs show that very well. Huge crowds started to gather. And then she went to the Bolshoi with Gorbachev that night, wearing what's called Eleanor black lace. She kept lists of all of this. Eleanor black lace evening gown. Eleanor, because Eleanor Lady Glover had lent it to her. And that was the first. And then they had a very long, very, very long meeting, 7-hour meeting the following day, when they argued about everything. And the way it worked, really, with Mrs. Thatcher and Gorbachev was that the nature of the strength of their relationship was they did argue so much. It was completely unlike normal diplomatic discourse. Essentially, she was saying, you know, capitalism's marvellous, we're a free country, we have freedom of speech and free markets, and you lot are all oppressed and miserable, and it's time you changed. And he was saying the opposite, and how wonderful and equal and splendid it was in his country. And they had an interesting argument about power, and he said that power in the Western world was a brilliant ballet to fool people about who really had the power, and it was really a few capitalists, and in the Soviet Union it was the people. And he said to her, your party is the party of, is completely out of date, because it's the party of the haves, and you have nothing to say for the have-nots. And she said, no, you don't understand what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to create a party of haves. I'm trying to create a country of haves. I want ownership to spread across the whole of the nation. And that was the sort of nature of the argument. And she pushed it very hard. And I found the sort of record of what Gorbachev said to the Politburo when he got home, as it were, got out of the meeting. And he said, she's an audacious woman, comrade. She was speaking as if it was it was like a piece of theatre. And he was very struck by how strongly she was pushing it. But he also was very struck by the fact that she expressed to him for the first time something he hadn't quite understood, which was how frightened the West was of Soviet Union because of some forms of Soviet adventurism. And so he got a better sense from her of how they had to be careful what they did, the Soviets, because the Brezhnev doctrine of always repelling capitalism wherever it got into any part of the socialist system was frightening to the West. And Gorbachev sort of said, we have to think about this, comrades, again, in this reporting to his colleagues. We have to think about this. This really matters. And they had an argument which got fiercer and fiercer. And I'll just give you a quick sense of how the Russians saw it. There's an advisor to Gorbachev called Chernaev who was there, who was completely in love with Mrs. Thatcher on a sort of sexual basis, really. And he says, she was, as always, extremely attractive, earnest but determined, stubborn, sometimes didactic. He was ironic, sarcastic, at times even abrupt. Gorbachev's belief in the correctness of his cause translated into self-confidence in personal contacts, even with women. And Thatcher, for all her practical intelligence and astonishing competence, always showed a feminine side as well. She tenderly looked over the men sitting in front of her, as if also making sure about the impression she made as a woman. And I think that is actually quite an accurate assessment of how she was doing it. So she was sort of playing the diplomacy, but also very concerned about what people now rather annoyingly call personal chemistry. And the key thing was that she went on television. And for the first time, this was not censored. First time a Western leader had been on television uncensored. And this was absolutely struck home with the Soviet people because they had never seen anything like it. And there's a nice letter, sorry, I'll just find it here, which a young man, Russian man, wrote about what it looked like. He says, he's a young geologist. He wrote it in rather funny but rather expressive English. She acted extremely professional, very attractive, and even sincerely. She was very rational and humanic. Now I often saw ladies dressed and haircutted a la Margaret Thatcher. Because in the street afterwards, they were all starting to imitate her styles. And then the interviewers, he comments on the interviewers, three huge fat political commentators attacked her. They were untactful, unprofessional, simply rude. The interview was the apotheosis of her visit. And the importance all of this was that you couldn't go back on it. It made a great difference to the life of the Soviet Union because once you'd allowed a Western politician to do this, and once it was very successful, it was very hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And so she was making quite a difference, I think, to what was actually happening in the Soviet Union. She had supper with Gorbachev at the end of all of this, and he took her into a different room for supper to change the mood of conversation. And he said, and I guess he'd done this before, because this was the Soviet guest house, I expect he'd done this trick with other leaders. He pointed to the painting on the wall, and he said, this painting is rather like our conversation, Prime Minister. It was a painting of a rural scene, and it's in the afternoon or early evening, and it's after storm, so there are clouds, but they're dispersing, and the sun is coming through. And he said, so it's rather like our conversation. There have been terrible storms, but there's some light. And Mrs. Thatcher, who obviously couldn't have prepared this because she hadn't been there before, she looked at the painting and she said, yes, Mr. General Secretary, but the light is coming from the West. So that was the sort of way she knew how to... And that, so that though she doesn't have a sense of humour, as I think I've showed from the parrot story, she certainly did have a sense of wit and ability to hit back. She went... back to England. And this, at the same time, something was happening, which was that poor Neil Kinnock had tried to go to see President Reagan at the same time to counter the Thatcher effect. But what I've discovered was, and he did go to see him, and the immediately after the meeting, in which President Reagan deliberately said to Dennis Healy, nice to see you, Mr. Ambassador, muddling him up with somebody else. Almost certainly deliberately. Immediately the Reagan team briefed against Kinnock, and they said, because they said the Kinnock account of this meeting's wrong, we told him how much we disapproved of him, et cetera, his unilateralist policy. And I've discovered satisfactorily that this was all set up by Charles Pearl, her private secretary, with the American ambassador to humiliate Kinnock and help her win the next election, which she was about to fight. So I just want you to see that at the same time that she was doing something very in a way, idealistic and important in big policy terms. She was always being fantastically ruthless at the same time and making sure she'd win the election. She timed it perfectly. This came together, the humiliation of Kinnock, the big move forward towards the end of the Cold War, and the general election in the summer of that year, which she won with a majority of 100. Thank you.
The Oldie Magazine Recordings. This is a Radio Gorgeous production for The Oldie 2015.